This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Oh, at least Bennett Sturts, who, you know, could be an NBA player. So I like what Iowa did. I'm trying to think, like, we don't know what Villanova's doing yet. Nico Medved's a really good coach. I don't know what the ceiling at Minnesota is. Are you just trying to be like middle of the Big Ten? I don't know, but I thought that guy, I was just so impressed. I was so impressed with him in the second half of Memphis, and I was so impressed with him throughout. Like, he called that timeout, you know, when they were down two, and you know, he drew up a three. He drew up a play for a three, and he got it, and the guy made it. And it was beautifully executed, yep. Beautifully designed, and it's just unfortunate that Maryland happened to have an NBA player, and Colorado State really doesn't. Well, they might have one in Neat Clifford, but that was the difference. So I think Nico Medved's a really good coach. I think he's going to do well at Minnesota, whatever that looks like.
And will Josh Pastner take a UNLV to the NCAA tournament?
I think he will. I think he'll make them relevant. I was on Vegas radio yesterday, and it was just so interesting the way they framed it. They were like, hey, man, we wanted to have you on to talk about Josh's successes at Memphis. And I was like, man, it's so interesting that you guys frame it that way because, you know, here it's viewed as there were some successes, but it's not, I don't think, on the whole viewed as a success. It's viewed as a, man, there should have been more than what was accomplished. But no, I think he's going to bring great energy there. He's going to bring, some vitality to that program. They need it. And the league is getting worse. So I think he'll definitely have a chance to win it and get back to the tournament. Yeah.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Yep. John Martin, Jason and John, every single day from 11 till 2. Got to take a break. Talk to Chris Harrington on the other side. Then Sam Hardiman. It is the Jeff Dawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
It is Jump Back from the late, great Rufus Thomas, Memphis music legend. Earning that title, as few do, born on this day in 1917.
So it turns out that 10.5-point spread, and you and I like to talk about gambling lines a lot. That's what we do here. That 10.5-point spread was not ambitious on the part of the Grizzlies. They win by 37. So what did you find most encouraging in that victory?
They won by 37, and they were down one at the half.
And they were down 14 in the second quarter. Yes, they doubled them up in the second half, 76-38.
Well, I mean, you start with acknowledging that the Jazz are bad.
Yep.
And so there is that. But they didn't, like, squeak by. Like, they won by 37. They won by 37 without Ja Morant, with mostly no Jaren Jackson in the second half, and with pretty much everybody playing well. And the fact that they got down early, I think, you know, not good to get down early. They've been doing that too much. But it seemed to, like, light a little bit of a fire under them, and you could see that the defensive urgency improved over the course of the game. And, yeah, they're playing the Jazz, so don't make too much of it. But, like, everybody played well. They played really good basketball in the second half of that game. You know, really the end of the first half and then in through the second half. Like, everyone locked in and got focused, and everybody played well, which was, like, good to see. They needed that win, but in addition to that, they sort of needed a performance like that.
Yeah.
Because they're probably losing the next game. You know?
One would imagine playing Oklahoma City, who's now got to 60, that they're losing the next game. So, yeah, everybody played well. Let's start with the bigs, though. They stuck with the starting lineup with Santi in it. I guess that's what they're going to do.
It seems that way, and that's probably the right move. You know, you got to lean into what you can rely on if you go into the playoffs. And, you know, Zach Edey's a rookie, and Jay Huff is, like, kind of a rookie, even though he's old. Like, he certainly never, you know, played playoff basketball. He barely played regular season basketball until this season. And so, you know, you lean into your best guys, and that's probably the way to go. It makes the rotations tricky when you're coming off the bench with two bigs who don't really play together in Huff or Edey, but they've been managing that pretty well, I would say. And then we'll see where it goes in the playoffs. But and then Huff and Edey both played well, obviously, last night, too, along with everyone else.
Yeah, and then that's one particularly, I don't know, I take with a grain of salt because it's Utah, but Edey with 15 and
sure.
7, and Huff 15 and 5. 2 3-pointers from Edey. Had doubled up a Jay Huff on 3-pointers. Jay Huff was just throwing down dunks. It felt like, particularly in the third quarter, one after another after another. I thought the line from Vince Williams was encouraging, though. Again, everybody played well. 3 of 5 from 3, so he hit some shots. 4 rebounds, 15 points, plus 31. That's what we were hoping for.
Yeah, not just the line, the play.
The play.
Right? I mean, I thought he would. I posted this on Blue Sky at halftime. I thought he was playing really well. I thought it was the best he'd played in a long time, and that was before he really hadn't scored much to that point. I think he had like 5 points or whatever at halftime. He still wasn't. It wasn't like the vintage. We say vintage with a guy who's like 2 years into his career. It wasn't like the peak last year version of Vince Williams. He had zero steals. He had zero blocks. He was not the guy who was like just sort of, you know, appearing, like teleporting himself into plays to break things up and to do stuff. He was not that at all. But I thought he just played a really solid game on both ends. You know, he had a couple turnovers that were like bad pass turnovers, and they've been more miscommunication kind of things. But he was just playing a good, solid, all-around game. You know, I mean, scoring efficiently, moving the ball, playing defense. You know, I just thought he was helping the team win whenever he was on the floor, which is the number one thing I want out of him. That's the number one thing with Vince Williams. It's not, is he scoring? Is he helping you win? Is the team playing better? Is he sort of greasing things and helping the team play better? And I thought that was, you know, maybe the best game he's played since he's come back from the ankle. And one thing I wonder about that, though, specifically, and I thought about this before the game, I was most interested in watching him in that game than anyone else because of the 3-day rest. And so did the 3-day rest really help him? Or is that just happenstance that he had this best game coming off the longest rest? And if the rest was a factor, is it just going to, once the games start coming more frequently, is it going to go back to what it was? Or did the 3-day rest sort of help the healing in a way that's more permanent? These are all things I wonder about with him.
Well, and you do get a little bit of space in the playoffs. There could be 2 days between
right.
that you get, but you know, when you travel, you can spend a couple of days between these games. They tend to be spaced out, and maybe that bodes well. So it's interesting because you talk about off court, on court, are they winning, et cetera. Scottie Pippen Jr. earlier on in the season, he's noticeable because he does defensively, right? He's making plays defensively. You notice him, and yet
right.
you would point out that his on-court, off-court numbers are not necessarily, had not necessarily been particularly to his credit. I don't know.
Well, it was because of the offense. The offensive numbers were not right. good team numbers when he played. And I think the degree that was related to him, and that's, again, that's a team number applied to an individual player, so there's noise in there. It's not all about right. the individual player. But to the degree that it was applied to him, I mean, I think you can see it in terms of his turnovers, and you can see it in terms of, like, he's just when they were asking him to run point guard, the offense wasn't always flowing as smoothly with him at point guard. And I think since he's come back into the rotation in March, I haven't looked at the number on this, but I feel like the turnover rate is down pretty meaningfully with him. And I think, and he's already shooting the ball well, but I think he's playing a lot better. And he's playing better on both ends. He's playing well on both ends of the floor. And I think that's been, as rocky as the last few weeks have been for the Grizzlies, that's been the one clear good story, is the reemergence of Scottie Pippen and how well he's played in the month of March, really.
Right. And last night, by the way, a double-double with zero turnovers. That was a good day for Scottie Pippen. A good night for Scottie Pippen. Grizzlies win by 37 after trailing by one at the half. And you look around, and this is a point you've made, other teams will lose. And sure enough, other teams did lose. Warriors without Steph losing in Miami in the Jimmy Butler return game, where he was booed, I gather, every time he touched the ball. And so that certainly helps matters. As we look forward, you've got Oklahoma
City. Didn't somebody else lose last night?
Someone who else lost last night. Houston won last night. I can look this up. Jeffrey, did someone else lose last night? Someone else of note lose last night? I know Houston won. Let's see. Here we are. Well, let's see. We had Tuesday. We had, if the Mavs losing counts, I don't think that particularly counts. No.
All right.
The Thunder beat the Kings. That was it. That was it for last night. Tonight you got the Clippers. Tonight you got the Clippers against the Knicks. And so that'll be interesting. Grizzlies are back and forth, though. They're half game up on the Lakers. So you got Oklahoma City, then you've got the Lakers, then you got the Celts, no Tatum at this point. You got the Warriors, Steph. Steve Kerr said Steph will return Friday. Are you hoping for 2-2, Chris?
I'm not hoping for more than that, that's for sure. But I think, you know, the Lakers and the Warriors games, those are sort of the big ones. And winning those games, I think, would be helpful to the cause. I'm still at the point where obviously you want to avoid, you don't want to miss the top six, which I don't think they will. But after that, like, it's still not clear that like three is better than four or two. It's just the matchup stuff. But you know, let's control the basement there and win some games. And so I think the Lakers and the Warriors games are both extremely winnable because you're at home. All evidence suggests the Grizzlies are better than the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers are like half a game above them in the standings. But if you just look at the fundamentals of those teams, like the Grizzlies are probably better than the Lakers. It's just that the Lakers have got those two guys. And so that sort of changes the way you think about it a little bit. I'll be interested to see if Ja's back in that stretch. Like, I don't think he's going to be back, you know, on Thursday necessarily. But it wouldn't surprise me if he was back sometime during that homestand.
Grizzlies are, by the way, half a game better than the Lakers. So that also contributes to the
evidence. Oh, did that change?
Okay. They are now half a game up on the Lakers.
Because the Lakers lost the previous night to the Magic.
Yeah,
the Grizzlies were off and they won.
All evidence suggests they're better. If they have Ja, right? Like, it's, I mean, so much of this is who the hell is suiting up for who these days.
Right.
So, and then I think we know two things. We know you want to stay in the top six, and then there's no reason not to be four instead of five, right? I mean, you want to go get home court. I mean, that's the other clear target that you can focus on, irrespective of what the matchup is.
No, I was saying like the 4-3 question is not quite as certain.
Yeah,
right.
I think that's right. All right, Jaren, I think has hit 65. I think last night was 65.
Yeah,
no, is it 64?
Yes, but no, it was 65. But one of those games, he played 2 minutes because he came out with ankle injury. So I don't think that counts. So I think he needs at least one more game. There's another game in there where he only played 17 minutes. So it's not clear to me whether that one counts.
I don't think if I think if he had 64 games of more than 20 minutes and then one game at 17, I think there is some wiggle room somewhere in there, but the 2 minute game doesn't count. Okay. So I think he needs one more to hit the number.
Given the swoon, the Grizzlies swoon, does that impact, from your perspective, the, let's assume he's going to hit 65. I don't think that what happened last night is going to keep him out here for long term. So, does this impact his all NBA odds possibilities?
It shouldn't. I'd have to take a look at it and see look at it again in terms of who people might vote for. It shouldn't, because he was not only a guy who should have been second team before this little quote unquote swoon. He was a strong second team. There's a real debate about whether he should even be a first team kind of guy. So I think maybe it knocks him down to a third team instead of a second. Like, maybe that happens. I could see that. But I don't think I'm not making an all-NBA team.
Right. Okay. Dame Lillard out apparently for the season with thrombosis. I guess that's it for the Bucks, right?
Probably. I mean, I don't know. The Bucks weren't like, you know, world beaters even right before that. But I still, like, you know, does that mean the Bucks can't win a first-round playoff series when they have Giannis Antetokounmpo? No, that doesn't mean that. But even with Dame, I don't think they were a contender to, like, get to a conference finals or beyond. So I don't know. It definitely is bad for the Bucks, but I don't know if it fundamentally changes their range very much.
It is funny. Is New York a contender? Like, are the only contenders Cleveland, Boston, and Oklahoma City?
There's certainly a bright line below those teams. I mean, the problem with saying that is that leaves you one team in the West. They're really saying, like, literally no one else could get to the finals in the West. I mean, what if Shea turns an ankle, right? I think in the East, I would give New York would be a puncher's chance team. And in the West, I really have a hard – I would like to not pick the Thunder. I think the Thunder are probably not as good a playoff team as they are a regular season team. But I just don't think there's another team in the West that's really all that good, honestly. I think there's a bunch of good teams, but they're all like B-plus teams at best. And that's Denver, that's Houston. Now, whoever you want to choose, I think the highest ceiling teams in the West after the Thunder are probably the Clippers and the Warriors. And, like, but now Steph's banged up and, like, is Kawhi Leonard going to make it? And so, to me, it's almost the Thunder by default, even as good as they've been.
All right, and then finally, you have your put up your film review for the week, Memphis, the film goings-on in Memphis. What is A Working Man?
It's an action movie with Jason Statham, and you may not be familiar with him, but he's a box office draw. There's lots of action movies that he stars, The Beekeeper, Crank, stuff like that. This is just the latest Jason Statham action movie. It sounds like basically the same plot as the Liam Neeson action movie Taken. And hey, it worked for that guy, so why not just do it again?
Well, you took a little bit of a shot. Like, you just said, I forgot the line. Does it guarantee it will be as satisfying? I think that was it. But you haven't seen it, so we don't know that it's not as satisfying. Was Taken satisfying? I didn't see it.
Yeah, no. Okay, Taken works. Like it works. It's like an action revenge movie. It's like, you know, I'm applying my special set of skills against, you know, a universe of bad guys to rescue my daughter. Like, that's pretty effective stuff.
Right. And this time it just happens to be the boss's daughter. So it's different,
right,
Chris.
Right.
So it's unique and different because of that. What is Death of a Unicorn?
It's a comedy. It's a new comedy. It's sort of an odd, I mean, I haven't seen it. So, but it's Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega. And they're a father-daughter on some kind of road trip, and they hit an animal on the road, and it turns out it's not a deer, it's a unicorn, and it goes from there.
Oops. Okay, and then finally, you got two older films that are being shown. Some Like It Hot is at Crosstown, and Dr. Strangelove, I think, is at Paradiso. Crosstown tomorrow night, I think, Some Like It Hot. Some Like It Hot you called one of the great comedies, is that right?
Well, I mean, everybody calls it one of the great comedies, you've seen Some Like It Hot, right?
I have never seen Some Like It Hot.
Okay, well, you should go to Crosstown tomorrow night. Some Like It Hot is sort of by acclamation one of the great movie comedies, if not the great movie comedy, and it's great. I mean, it's Billy Wilder wrote and directed, Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, Marilyn Monroe. It's sort of an action musical comedy. Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis are musicians who witness a mob hit, and then they're on the run from the mobsters because they're witnesses, and they fall in with this all women band that's on a tour, that's getting on a train to go on tour, and they dress up as women and join the band, and Marilyn Monroe's in the band, and the movie is a really funny movie. It also has a lot sneakily to say about gender and sexuality and all kinds of stuff.
And then Dr. Strangelove?
Well, it's not the movie Dr. Strangelove. It's a theatrical. It's a London theatrical version of Dr. Strangelove that's doing a live theatrical broadcast.
I see. Okay. All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian and his dog in the background. We appreciate his dog chiming in as a special a guest. Have you seen Some Like It Hot? He seemed surprised and I got to say disappointed in me, like in my cultural.
Well, I have not seen Some Like It Hot. I've seen Dr. Strangelove.
I have not seen either, and I feel like I should probably go see Some Like It Hot. We didn't. I don't know when in my life I would have. Like when am I going to go watch older films? I mean, I started my film life in the 1970s, basically, right? First film I ever saw was probably Swiss Family Robinson, right? That was probably at a movie theater. I remember seeing that in a movie theater. And then onward from there. And I really haven't gone back. I saw Citizen Kane. I've seen Citizen Kane. But View? Have you seen the classics?
So some of these, like, I saw...
I've seen Casablanca.
Well, I'd see, like, a few of them in, like, a college course or like some type of academic setting, but like I don't like go out and actively seek like I've got to go watch the classics.
I should go watch Some Like It Hot. I should probably go. I should see Some Like It Hot. It's going to be at Crosstown tomorrow night, I think, is when it is. All right, we got Sam Hardiman coming up next. We'll talk to him about Stephon Diggs. His Patriots have added Stephon Diggs. We'll also talk to him about what's going on in the city. Before then, I will tell you, if you are getting something framed, the Frame Corner has been doing this for 50 years. 50 years of custom frame. They sell frames, too. Walk on into the Frame Corner, buy a frame. But custom framing is what they specialize in. They're fabulous at it. It takes real skill to walk. Someone walks in with a collection of sports memorabilia or their grandfather's Arrowhead collection, or to make that look beautiful, to display it perfectly, and so you'll have it forever. That is a real skill that the folks at the Frame Corner have mastered. They are real artisans at the task. We recently had something framed at the Frame Corner, and I will tell you, it's beautiful. Absolutely stunning. Claire's now trying to figure out where she's going to put it, but it is beautiful. They've been doing it for 50 years. You know they're good. Frame Corner Memphis, 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. Back in a moment with Sam Hardiman, Jeff Gawkinshire, 92.9 FM ESPN.
If you have a locked AT&T phone, we're here with Bolt Cutters. T-Mobile will help pay off your locked phone and give you a new 5G phone for free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrier freedom.
Via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax and a $10 device connection charge. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement. As due, bill credits end if you pay off devices early.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Gawkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman, of course, writes for the Daily Memphian, and he covers the city. He also happens to be a Pats fan, and they signed Stephon Diggs yesterday. And I have to imagine, Sam, that you're over the moon with happiness.
I'm mildly interested in it, is how I would describe it. Over the moon after having such a bad receiving core. Oh, it's not. I'm not over the moon. It's just no. The Patriots receiving core has been bad. I mean, the game I would have wanted to play is like best Patriots receiver since when? Julian Edelman? Like, better than Nelson Agholor, obviously, right?
Right.
So, like, who is
when you when you think of great Pats receivers? I mean, you think of Randy Moss. How long was Randy Moss a Pats receiver? Randy Moss.
It was like 2 years, like 2.5 years. Like, it wasn't long.
He was great. Julian Edelman was great in his role, right? Like,
Wes Welker, great in his role.
Wes Welker, great in his role.
Aaron Hernandez.
Oh, come on, man. Seriously?
Great in his role.
Seriously, we're going to do that? They have had great. Who the hell am I thinking of way back when?
I mean, we're missing Gronk, but that's a tight end, you know?
Right. Yeah, so let's just think.
He played 3.5 seasons for the Patriots. 3 full seasons, then he was traded in the 2010 season, in the middle of it.
Right.
So I'm looking at, I Googled great Patriots receivers, and I got Troy Brown. Deion Branch, Chris Hogan, Danny Amendola. Here you go. Stanley Morgan.
Who could forget?
The pride of Tennessee. Isn't he a Vol? Isn't Stanley Morgan a Vol? I think Morgan was a Vol. Terry Glenn was good, wasn't he? Or was he just a good draft pick? He was just
he was good, but like it's not an illustrious history.
Not. Given that they had like one of the great quarterbacks ever, a testament to his great Irving Fryer. Do you remember Irving Fryer? Was he before your time?
Before my time.
I think of him as an Eagle, right?
Receiving leaders for the Pats, Stanley Morgan is number one in terms of yards. Stanley Morgan, then Gronkowski, then Wes Welker, then Julian Edelman, then Troy Brown, then Irving Fryer, and then Ben Coates. So yeah,
I think half that was tight ends.
It's not a particularly distinguished group. Way back when, Randy Vataha, Jim Plunkett threw to Randy Vataha at Stanford, and then for the Pats as well. But anyway, Stephon Diggs, Jeffrey and I are hoping he tears apart the locker room. That's what we're hoping for. Toxicity and selfishness. What do you think? You on board?
You know, there was a good Chad Graff article about this in the Athletic today, which was saying, like, look, there is another side to Stephon Diggs, and, like, he can be a leader in certain moments, et cetera. I also would just like, you know, posit, like, this is the test of Mike Vrabel's culture, right? Like, Mike Vrabel comes in, you know, known for building a good culture, known for getting a lot out of his guys. Let's see, you know, I mean, I'm also curious, like, does Josh McDaniels just, like, use Stephon Diggs in the way he used Julian Edelman and Wes Welker, which was just like, we're going to run you in the slot and we're just going to abuse you until you break. Like, that's really interesting. I mean, like, more likely to, like, let's like over under games for the Patriots this season. 8.5, I'd set up Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, he might be too optimistic. It is interesting. That whole cycle of getting traded, the new place says there's another side. He's a leader. He just has competitive fire. Like, we went through this whole cycle in Buffalo. You know, he was misunderstood in Minnesota. And then in the end, it turns out the way it turns out. But here, the truth is that you don't really need him. Like, it's effectively a 1-year deal in terms of the guaranteed money. And now age is coming on the other side for him. So if I were a Pats fan, I'm decidedly not. I would be pretty happy, you know, get him someone to throw to anyway. All right. So, go ahead.
Real quick about Josh McDaniels. I was looking this up last night. Do you know what Josh McDaniels was doing at 29 years old?
What was he doing at 20? What was he doing at 20?
He worked for the New England Patriots. Do you know what he did at 39 years old?
I'm gonna guess.
He worked for the New England Patriots.
And now, how old is
he? And he's now 49 years old, and he will be working for the New England Patriots. I just found that fascinating.
And he's good at that job, right? And he's good at that job.
He is,
Yeah, seems to be good at that job. Okay. You wrote about, and I was very interested in, the public meeting that was held, the community meeting, Saturday at Riverside Missionary Baptist Church, featuring Memphis Mayor Paul Young. Who put this meeting together? How did it come to pass?
Yeah, so the City of Memphis and Memphis Community Against Pollution, which is a community group run by Keyshawn Pearson, the brother of State Representative Justin Pearson, put this together. It was sort of a joint thing that they put together. And what it featured was Keyshawn Pearson and the mayor sitting right next to each other side by side, where the mayor fielded questions from Keyshawn Pearson as well as the audience about his perceived support of XAI. And let's just say there were no questions asked that were positive about XAI.
This was a purely hostile audience. Is that right?
I mean, purely, I don't want to speak for hundreds of people that right. were in attendance in a large church, but it appeared from the boos and the hissing that the mayor received from time to time to not be very pro-XAI.
First of all, shout out to the mayor for now, it's in fashion to not actually meet with people because people are angry. And so it's good of Paul Young to go ahead and field these questions. I'm curious. Well, obviously, most of this was about skepticism about XAI, what they are doing in Memphis, and in particular, their impact on water and air quality in Memphis, right? Isn't that what the it was probably less about Elon Musk and Doge and the general controversial thoughts about Elon Musk now than it was specifically about Elon Musk, XAI, and air and water quality in Memphis?
I would actually say that from the audience questions that I heard, right?
Yeah.
I would say that the two were tied together.
Really?
Right? That this crowd in particular, and I think this is true of many, many people, right? Find it very difficult to separate what Elon Musk is doing in Memphis, what XAI is doing in Memphis, and what the wrecking ball they feel he is taking to the federal government. And it was clear in the questions, you know, multiple times people said to the mayor, all money ain't good money. Okay, because the mayor was making the argument that this is, as we are a community that is stagnant, that has declined in population, that hasn't seen growth, right? And we need money. And people just started shouting at that all money wasn't good money, right? And that, to me, showed that, like, there's just this dislike of Musk, and there's also this really big concern about what this data center could mean, and this belief that XAI has operated entirely in Memphis in an extractive manner. And I think that is a perception that segment of this community has, and I think it's going to be very difficult for anyone to disabuse them of that.
Well, it is interesting, because when this unfolded initially, Elon Musk may at that point have not been, you know, people might have been a slightly controversial figure, but he has become dramatically more controversial since it was first announced that XAI was coming to Memphis. He has taken a sledgehammer to the federal government since then. So it strikes me that there is probably both just, he's a bad guy, why do we want him on our city? Just sort of this emotional, well, all money ain't... What? But then there's, it does seem to me the place where they logically intersect, apart from just principle, is how much do we trust him? Like, we see him lying or misstating the facts routinely on Twitter as it pertains to the work with respect to the federal government. Why would we therefore trust what they say about the future of XAI and the impact of XAI here in Memphis? That strikes me to be a perfectly logical nexus there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna. I gotta be careful here because I still right. you know cover the company.
I understand.
But I would say right. Like at the same time, there has been a track record in Memphis. Right, there has been a pattern of behavior in Memphis, and that pattern of behavior, I will say, is not. You know, I don't want to say negative or positive, but the company has largely done what it said it was going to do. Like, it committed, you know, to building a gray water plant. It is planning on building a gray water plant, okay? Like, work, like, early site work, I was driving down yesterday where it was going to build a gray water plant, and it looked like early site work was underway for that gray water plant, okay? And so, like, they are doing what they're saying they're doing. At the same time, it's a private company. They don't share a ton of information. And that's where a lot of the skepticism is coming from the public, right? Is that you know, this has been the most high profile economic development deal in Memphis, Tennessee, since I've been here, and probably since Electrolux came to occupy the former factory XAI is now in. And what people really, you know, because they're plugging into the economic development process, is there was no public input. There was no public input. Well, typically these deals don't have a lot of public input. Okay. The only time you get public input is when they come for a tax break, right? And XAI hasn't come for a tax break.
That's what I was going to ask.
Going to get a tax break.
What, right. To the extent that, the mayor is, the implication here is that the mayor in some ways controls XAI, has been responsible for this, that there's, and in fact, they didn't put together an incentive package. They haven't offered tax breaks. They don't really, like, they're a private company. They can buy a space and move into a space. And I don't know, like, I'm curious at what point, where are the levers for the city of Memphis if they wanted to exert their levers over XAI?
Yeah, I mean, the levers for city of Memphis would be largely code enforcement. It would largely be, you know, compliance with regulation in terms of building, right? Like, that's really what the city of Memphis has available to them in this case. And, you know, the mayor essentially said, because the mayor comes from the development world. He worked for the city's housing. He ran the city's housing community development department before, and then he became the head of the Downtown Memphis Commission, which intersects with the private sector all the time. And he essentially said to the audience, and they did not like this, that I can't stop them from buying land in Whitehaven. Okay? He's like, it's a private land deal, and they weren't going to tell you about it, because if they told everyone, hey, we're going to buy this for a data center, the price goes up from them buying, you know, a 1 million square foot warehouse at 5422 Lane Road, right? And the audience didn't like that. At the same time, he was like, I don't regulate these natural gas turbines they use. That's the health part. The audience didn't like that. And there were people in the audience that said, you know, Catherine Burgess, the great reporter for MLK50, was there. We were chatting afterwards. She was like, someone next to me was like saying, essentially, well, what do you do if you don't regulate them, right? And this is, I think, the problem that, like, the mayor confronts and other leaders in this community confront, is just by allowing XAI to exist, they are seen as complicit in what a lot of people feel is a very, very bad thing from XAI.
Okay. In terms of, though, concrete bad things that one would worry about, right? It does seem like the focus at this point is the possible toxic emissions from the natural gas turbines, right? I mean, if they're building,
yes,
if they're building a water plant, it seems to me, and again, this is not my area of expertise, that's a net positive in terms of water quality in Memphis. Maybe there's something I'm missing, but that would seem to be. But in terms of the turbines, it does seem to be acknowledged that that's not necessarily a good thing. Now, is pressure being put on, I gather, on the health department, which is the county health department, has nothing to do with the mayor, to with respect to permitting those turbines?
Yeah, so Commissioner Brittany Thornton, during the Shelby County Commission committee meeting today, is going to introduce a resolution that's a largely powerless resolution. It's going to urge the Shelby County Health Department to hold a public meeting before approving any air emissions permit for these turbines. So these turbines, for people who are just plugging into this today, they are operating right now, many of them in Southwest Memphis, powering the data center. That is what is largely powering the data center. That and Tesla Megapacks, which are batteries, those are powering this thing. They are operating without an air emissions permit because they can, under federal regulation, for 364 days. To operate them longer, they need an air emissions permit. XAI needs an air emissions permit from the Shelby County Health Department, and they applied for one in January. Has not yet been approved.
All right. So all of that happened. There was one other topic before I let you go, because I was over at the AutoZone Park Monday and talking to Craig Unger, was the Cardinals were in town, about the future of AutoZone Park. And he said, listen, you know, we need something. We need improvements done to AutoZone Park. And then he said, sure, we didn't get the $25 million from the state, and that was disappointing. But to be clear, the $25 million wasn't going to cover everything we needed. That was going to get us started. And then we were going to use bonding or whatever to pay for additional things that need to be done. He said they're meeting with the city twice a week on these matters, et cetera. Do you have any sense of how that's going from the city perspective? And I mean, the problem here is like everything. Like there's the city has lots of needs. And so I don't know what the appetite is for spending. He said considerably in excess of $25 million. So whatever, I'll just say $40 million or $50 million on AutoZone Park.
Yeah, I mean, first, I don't really know how those conversations are going. It's, you know, one of those things where I sort of haven't dug in on May. What I would say is that $40 million for the city of Memphis, even if they're bonding it, is a lot of money right now, right? It's a lot of money.
Right.
And I would just also say this, and this is fair of the Grizzlies, it is fair of the Redbirds, right? We are talking about, when we're talking about money for stadiums, we are talking about public subsidies of private enterprises. Okay, that's what we're frankly talking about. And in terms of the Memphis Redbirds, they are part of Diamond Baseball Holdings, which is a large consortium of 30-plus or around 30 minor league baseball franchises that is owned by private equity. They are owned by Silver Lake Capital, okay? And so what we're really talking about is a private equity-led group, an owned group, asking city taxpayers to continue furnishing the taxpayer-owned home that they derive revenue from. That's what we're talking about here. And so that's a lot of need. The city has a lot of needs. And, like, to be clear, like, that's what we're talking about. Is we're talking about a subsidy of a private equity-led company.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's exactly true with the Grizzlies. It's a privately owned company by a guy who has a whole lot of money. And then the problem is you look at the alternative. What would it look like if you didn't do that and the Grizzlies left? And what would it look like if you didn't do that and you had an empty ballpark at Third and BB King? And so you have to balance those things. I'll be fascinated to see how it plays out. So I wanted to get your perspective on, yes, whether $40 million is a lot of money to the city of Memphis. So, Sam, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sam Hardiman. You can follow him over on Twitter or X at Sam Hardiman. If you're selling your house, Josh Hysaw would be the person to call, 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers.com. I've told you before, I met with him. Could not have been more impressed. Flexible fees, no upfront costs. Let you out of your contract at any time. Plus, honestly, if you pop over to the website, find out how much your home is worth for free. Again, phone number 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers.com. Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming next on Jason and John. Jason Fitz and Coach Norton Hurd will join their program today. Cerritos with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. CJ Hurt's going to join us. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for now. Work is done.